Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Nice to be with you tonight. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and sitting on my right is Marta Kristen.
Hello.
And our regular hosts that have been hosting the show since 1896, Tom and Melissa Gould. Hello, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
As many of you know, if you're regular listeners, we are here to answer your questions the best we can, and we welcome you to call in and share with us. The number here is 888-627-6008. Many of you had, before the show, emailed questions, and we'll get to some of those, but during the show, we welcome your call. So sometimes we get lonely, so call us. We need somebody to talk to. Okay, so let's get started. Announcements. We have two retreats that are still open for registration. The October retreat, which is for bereaved parents only, I think there's three or four spots left, so you can still get in on that. And we opened the regular retreat in January in Florida, so you can go on the website and register for either one of those. So let's go to some of the questions that were already sent in. If I put on my glasses, I could read it. So my 29-year-old identical twin son was killed by a box truck while riding his motorcycle to work from Bushwick, Brooklyn, to his office in Manhattan on August 20th, 2024. It was due to the negligence of the New York City Department of Transportation. He should not have been killed, but I believe our soul makes contracts with spirit, and our death date is a sign when we enter our body. I've also been told we pick our parents and we are here to learn lessons. At 8:55 a.m. that morning, I had a surge of energy pass through me, and my thought was my life was going to change forever. My son was hit by the truck at 8:51 a.m. and proposed dead at 8:55, as when the EMT arrived there at the scene, he had passed. I feel him with me, and in the good days, I feel him hugging me, and on the bad days, I feel like he left maybe to help someone else. Is that true, or are they with us, with all of us? I know he's channeling to his twin, as many mediums have told me that. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, it is intriguing. Because of the timing involved and feeling the surge of energy that her life was going to, you know, change forever, and you know the timing is exactly at that time. I mean, he was pronounced dead at 8:55, and at 8:55 is the same time that she felt, you know, that energy. So it's not a thing that we haven't heard before, right? I mean, people, especially the connection between mother and son, mother and daughter, that bond is really sometimes, you know, quite amazing and strong. What about, you know, her question about are they with all of us, and or, you know, maybe when they're not with us, they're helping someone else.
You know, as you read that, Bob, I thought of two things.
I'll start with the first one. Just before we went on the air, I was looking through notes I had saved from different grief groups that I'm a part of, and just seeing if there were any questions there that we might be covering. And one of the stories I saved, the woman, it was from over 30 years ago, and she had been pregnant, and suddenly during her pregnancy felt this whoosh, this energy leave her body. And when she went to her doctor's appointment the next day, found out that she had had a miscarriage, but there were none of the signs, no blood, no pain, none of that. She had a DNC, which is what they often do early on to, you know, remove everything. But she, you know, all these years later, she's still recalling with clarity that feeling of that spirit leaving her body. And that led to her questioning what I believe you've talked about in the past, studies showing that, you know, it could be, I don't know if there's the equipment to do it now, maybe in hospice settings where they can capture some sort of image of a spirit leaving the body. I know Tom and I felt it with his mom before she passed. That almost was like a whoosh too, wasn't it?
Well, I remember distinctly that you know, she had wanted to stay at home for her last days, and we were honoring that. But it got to a point where she was unconscious, and the aid that the insurance company sent us couldn't handle it by herself. So we figured we had to bring her to the hospice. And when the ambulance showed up and they brought the gurney in, I helped move her to the gurney. And as soon as we picked her up, she made a sound, and I felt a whoosh go right through me. And I thought that was her staying home instead of going off. And she never regained consciousness. So I fully believe that's when her spirit left her body.
And then the second part that the listener asked about them, you know, always with us. And I always am telling people, yes, they're always with us. They're always around. And people are wondering, what else are they doing on the other side? And Tom can explain how they're multiple tentacles all representing you. But what I've been thinking about the other day, wondering about my dad when he passed, actually, funny, he passed the day before Tom's mom passed. But he was up in Maine, and Tom's mom was here on Long Island. I don't sense, and no mediums have ever really brought my dad through. However, as we've talked about, oh gosh, it's now over 13 years ago, we got captured a little bit of EVP with my dad saying it's grandpa, and I still listen to that. But no visits from him. And what I do feel, because my dad, while he was here, his whole purpose, I hate to say it, was sort of less about family, although he loved us all very much and we knew it. It was about sort of saving the world, fighting for the underdog. He was on all these committees. And I feel as though that's what he's still busy doing. And I think I even spoke about, I think I talked about it on the air a few shows ago, because it was kind of funny, because I saw my dad in a dream, and he was surrounded like by people, like all surrounding him as he moved through a crowd. And I remember thinking, oh, I've got to go ask Bob and Fran what I should ask him. And that was all in my dream. So it comforts me. I don't feel a loss that he would not be around me. In fact, I think that would be wonderful if that's still his passion and still what he is working on. So those are my responses to this one listener.
Want to add to that at all?
Well, I've told this story before about my mother and father, that when my father was passing in the hospital, I awakened her to tell her that his blood pressure was going up and down, up and down, and that was the sign that the nurse had told me to look out for. And so she put her forehead next to his, and she all of a sudden looked up with this great surprise. And I said, "What happened?" And she said that she saw his whole life go through her. And it was that whoosh, Tom, that you're talking about, you know, that it was just this amazing feeling of having experienced who he was. And I mean, his whole soul. And I think it gave her so much comfort. Also, I'm adopted, but my birth mother called one of my birth sisters one morning and was crying. And my sister, Marietta, said, "What's wrong?" And she said, well, she had just dreamt that a sister, an 18-year-old sister, had died. And indeed, that morning, she had been in a car accident in Sweden. She had been hitchhiking, and the car went into an electrical pole, and she stepped out during the rain and was electrocuted. And but she, you know, that kind of intuition, that kind of instinct, I think, you know, when you're so close to people, you have that. That feeling that just fills you. And you know, this woman who has written about her son, and he wanted her to know that he was, I think, passing, and he was going to be all right. And and it was in a way a comfort.
And when your sister had that dream, you know, don't discount the possibility that the 18-year-old sister that was killed.
It was my mother, our birth mother.
Your birth mother, yeah. Came. It was a visitation.
Yes.
You know, not so much intuition, but a real...
A visitation.
To let her know.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. Okay, here's a question. Where do our deceased go, and what do they do? Can they eat, et cetera? Just souls? Still a mystery? Well, yeah, I mean, I guess it is, but we have our thoughts on that. And Tom, you're going to say something?
Yeah, well, it definitely is a mystery still, but as far as we know, there isn't another place. It's just another form of being. As far as where do they go? They've shed off their mortal physical body, and their pure energy, which is vibrating at a much higher rate than we are, but they're still around us. I mean, their energy is part of the energy that we walk through every day. And that's something when people say, where do they go, and why they can be with us for a lot of the time, because they don't have to come back. They just have to be here and observe what's going on. I'm sure they like to keep tabs on the people that they love that are still here, and they can do that. There's many reports when you hear from mediums talking to people, talking about, well, you know, remember the wedding last week? I was there, and I know a lot of people don't believe in orbs. They think that's something... a photographic anomaly, but I tend to lean towards, when I see an orb in a photo, you can tell whether it's a flash going somewhere or it's an actual imprint of something. And I've noticed that, particularly at my daughter's wedding, the dance floor was filled with orbs. And I feel that that's where they're going to come. They're going to come when you're having fun, where there's music and laughter and fun. that's when spirit will show up and hang out and enjoy the party with you, which is, again, what mediums I've seen, heard them report that, yeah, well, I was having a great time. I was dancing at your wedding. So that's what they can do. What they do all the time, that's a different story. I know that there, another thing that people don't realize is that there are levels of energy. You know, we're living in a physical plane here now, and when we cross over, we're in another level of energy, but there are further levels going up. And so what you need to do when you get to the next level of energy is you have to find out, well, what do I need to do to get my energy to the next level? And you work on that. Exactly how that is, I've never heard anybody channel an explanation of what they do to get to the next level. But your work isn't done just because you die. In fact, you know, your soul is eternal, and so you're always working towards something.
I think that makes me think of when people talk about being reincarnated, and often people feel like, I feel myself, this is my last time around, and I'm not certain why, I just have that feeling. But when you think maybe there's more to be worked on and you do reincarnate, they say it's a choice. I guess we'll find that out. But maybe then that's when we could elevate.
The interesting thing, the way the question was worded, they said just souls, meaning to me that, you know, souls are, you know, like the image of floating on clouds and playing harps, like there's no activity. It's just a mind that blended in with everything else. And we're just souls, you know. So, but we all do different things, and we all different activities. And I would guess it's the same on the other side. We have a question here. If you suffered trauma in life from a deceased person, and you have forgiven them, but remember, does that hurt when you think about it in the afterlife? So I guess what you're saying is that her person that died, she suffered trauma from them, but while he was still alive, she forgave him. But now that he's on the other side, when she thinks about him, does that bother him, you know, thinking about it, you know?
I think that's what is taken care of in that life review. And so when she thinks about it, but this person is on the other side, it, with grace, they acknowledge it, but it's not painful at that time, because they've already gone through that pain in the life review and are at peace with how things played out. It was all, you know, it's not forgot, it's forgiven, amends have been made, and I don't know how to explain it differently, but I don't think it causes them further trauma. I think they're more at peace and elevating.
Yeah.
I think
Like they don't know what they did. They're painfully aware of the pain that they inflicted on others while they were here. As Melissa says, the first thing that happens apparently when you cross over is you relive your life, and the pains that you have inflicted on someone else, you feel. Yeah. And so
magnified.
Yeah. And you're not sitting before a panel of judges who are looking at your life and go, well, you did that, so you got to do this. No, you are the one who are your own judge and jury, that you see the pain you've inflicted, you see how it has impeded your soul's development, and as I say, if you're judge and jury, you then might decide, you know, I didn't get it right. I need more work. Maybe I'll go back and try another life, or maybe I can progress a little better.
Yeah, and sometimes we forget the horrible person that may have inflicted trauma on others, now in this different dimension is no longer the same person. He no longer has the same rage or ego and jealousy and greed and stuff like that. So it's hard for us to think of that person as being a different person, but it's likely that they are, or they will become.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Oh. Well, I just wanted to say that as an actor, if you're playing a bad person or what most people would consider a bad person, as an actor, you can't go to, oh, I'm going to find the bad in the person. Instead, you go and try and re recognize what made them who they are. And I think when a person passes, I think that they recognize then about themselves that and they give you the gift, I think, eventually, that the understanding of why they were, how they if they hurt you terribly. And I'm almost positive that when they are on the other side, they see it all, and they recognize their own volatility and damage that they've perpetrated on others, and are very sorry about it, and they hope that that you will understand eventually, like the actor understands the person who is perhaps playing an evil person. They're made because not they weren't born with it, they became it. And so the I think that when they go, when they pass on, they understand that, and you'll begin to understand it and forgive as you go through the process of forgiving them.
I think too that we should talk about more those individuals that have that life review and still don't get it. Like, I don't think everybody who has that life review, unless the life review in our, I know there's no time on the other side, but if some sort of time might exist where it's not a quick fix and they go through that life review and see and feel all those horrible things they did, but it could have been a lot and it might not be quickly remedied, and maybe that's when reincarnation comes back. Although again, Tom would tell you some tentacle of them is still in on the other side. So I don't know. I think that's more to think about.
It's a good point, right? Because I always think about life review as being like instantly life changing because you're feeling everything. But it's a valid point. Maybe some people don't get as much out of a life review as others, and it takes them, some periods of progression on the other side. That makes sense.
I didn't mean to say that it happened suddenly. I
Oh,
mean,
yeah.
what I mean, I don't know how long it would take. Some people might take more than others, but I do think that it does happen.
Yeah, and I wasn't going off of what you were saying, Marta, about that. I was still thinking, gee, I don't know about this, So yeah, I think these are all things we will find out someday.
Someday.
Certainly, if you look around at mankind in general, you can tell there's a lot of people who've got a long way to go.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and Marta can tell us about if the same holds true on other planets because she was lost in
I still am.
but... Okay, kind of a practical question. How often do you recommend meeting with a medium in regards to ones we have lost? I am still deep in my grief, almost all consuming. I have met with a medium twice in the past 10 months. It's been 6 months since my last session. I feel like I'm really wanting another one. I think we're in agreement here that there's no, it's different for every person. What I mean, certainly seeing, two mediums in the past year is not, excessive. The only thing that we caution against is, making the medium, your lifeline and visiting them. We've seen people that go to mediums twice a month, it's 24 times a year, and that can get into the area of addiction. You become addicted to mediums. But I certainly can understand how that could happen because the medium does become a lifeline to your loved one. But I would say if you, as long as you're going to good mediums and it brought you hope and comfort, go for it, right?
Do you think they're revisiting the same medium?
She doesn't say, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, people, there's a natural inclination if you get a good medium reading to go back to that same medium because you know that that medium made a connection with your loved one. I always looked at it from a different perspective, is that I would rather go to several different mediums and have them all say the same thing, because then it reinforces my the strength of my conviction that they're really talking to my loved one. But that's just me.
I think I feel that way as well.
What happens to you when you suppress or refuse to acknowledge non-physical experiences that are happening? So, I mean, we get contacted by a lot of people, that have these intuitive experiences and they hear voices and they have these visitations and they're wondering, I'm told that this can't happen, and maybe something bad is happening to me, or maybe I'm crazy, and so they suppress it. A lot of our own mediums tell us that they had these gifts as a child and they suppressed it till the later ages because, they were dismissed or worse when they related it to others. So I think as far as what happens, I think that suppressing it and refusing to acknowledge it is harmful.
Oh, we have a friend who definitely seems to have abilities, and he's suppressing it, and he's not in the best health. We love him. I'm not wishing ill on him, but it's just kind of interesting to think about knowing some of the background and then seeing how he's doing in general. But that's a good question.
Well, society in general encourages suppressing these things. When you're, as we have found, that a lot of children are have this ability that they can communicate, like the child who comes down to breakfast and said, "Oh, grandma was in my room last night and said hi." And immediately they're met with, "Oh, yeah, you were just dreaming," or, "Oh, that's just this." And so, well, you go to a doctor and say, "Well, doc, I saw this, my grandmother." "Oh, that's just this. That's not." So every you go to your clergyman and they go, "Oh, no, that's not." So everywhere you go in society, the answer is no, you didn't experience that. So. And I have friends that we were talking at a party the other night, and he doesn't believe at all, and yet he was talking about a vivid visitation dream that he had with his mother, that he could, she hugged him, and he could feel the hug, and he goes, "Wait a minute, I thought you were dead. Where are you?" And she goes, "Well, I always wanted to see Paris." And he said, "That's so his, that was exactly what his mother would have said." And I said, "Well, there you go. You had a visitation." "Well, and then he went, fell back on his religious upbringing to say, "No, that's not true." The number of cases of people who quickly recount experiences with the spiritual world and then just as quickly shut the door on it.
Yeah.
I only have one correction. You said every place you go, people dismiss. Not when you come to Forever Family Foundation. We don't dismiss anything. All right. Okay. Assuming that people in the next world communicate telepathically, and there are no bodies, one would assume that chronological age makes no difference there. Who wants to know what our thoughts are? So, I mean, I understand. I mean, you, I look at you and I pick up clues, as to your age and other things. But if you're communicating by thought and they're not manifesting a body, does age make any difference? I mean, we think in physical terms, we're talking to a 6-year-old, we're talking to a 90-year-old. So yeah, age is, I mean, and wisdom has nothing to do with age either, I would say.
That's a good question. I'm thinking of certain, I mean, if thoughts are being transferred to one another, do those thoughts make references to things? I mean, once you're on the other side, it's like time is gone. So, if you made fun of Benjamin, who was it who had the wooden teeth, or, just some expression even. I would that point put you in a certain age development group, like how far you made it? I don't
Well, there is no time, so there is no age.
Right.
And our souls are eternal, so there is no beginning, there is no end. So yeah, age is meaningless. And however, if you want to communicate with your loved one who's still here, you manifest a vision either for the person directly or through a medium of how you want to look. I know my mother saw my father at one point after he had passed, and she said, and he looked much younger. So that's entirely up to you, which goes back again to
Oh, right.
the first person who talked about, can you eat on the other side? And I have heard stories that you manifest what you want. You manifest a house to live in. You manifest that you're going to be on a lake or something. And these are things that you can do. So I imagine you could manifest eating something, whether you taste it or not is another story. But
And also intimate relationships. Can you manifest that?
okay.
One would hope.
Yeah.
Let's.
Sure as hell hope so.
Well, it's an interesting question because I've had shortly after my husband died, I did a lot of meditation and I went to talk with him. But then my parents came into it, but it was all thought. There was no talking. It was all thought. And interestingly, there was a whole group of people behind them. Now, I don't know how what that means, but perhaps, it's other lives, other discussions, other, conversations I've had with a variety of people in my life. But there was a whole group behind them. And they, by the way, they answered my questions, and because I was asking for help, and it was soothing and calming, and just having them in my life, to be able to talk with them in this mind conversation was very soothing and encouraging for me. And calming. So I was very I sought that, and so each night before I go to sleep, that's what I would try and manifest. And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. But when it worked, it was quite extraordinary. And I felt a great deal of love.
You hit on something that might answer a lot of questions that we get. In fact, we got one today about they came to visit me and it was wonderful, but now it's a week later. I want them to visit me again and they're not coming back. Why are they not coming back? What you were told, what you described, gives me a insight into that, that maybe they can't do it by themselves. You know, there's talk when you get to the other side that you get into soul groups.
Yeah, I was going to say
people who are of the same, you know, musicians or scientists or something like that. And you're in this soul group interacting with people and saying, I want to go and meet, you know, reach out to my loved one, and I can't do it. So the group does it. Yeah. The energy of the group allows the one member of the group to communicate. And so it's a group effort. And that's why you saw other people behind him, is that they were helping him with this communication.
That's just what I was picturing, the soul group. But I couldn't express it like that, that the help that was coming. I just thought it was the group that they are now melded or blended into, but that makes perfect sense, I think.
It does. It makes sense. That makes absolute sense to me. Wow. That they were all there to support and hold up my discussion.
Yeah. You know,
my mental discussion.
Well, they always say it takes a village, right?
So, yeah.
Here's a question that's I can relate to, because it happened to me last week. But the question was, it doesn't happen often, but sometimes I hear a voice call out my name. I turn around quickly, but there's no one there. Could this be someone in spirit trying to get my attention? I don't know if you remember, I told you I don't know where we were, but I was rounding a corner while I was walking, and I heard somebody say, Bob, you know, so my instinct was to quickly, you know, turn around. I figured, all right, somebody knows me, or they think I'm somebody else, but who would know me in LA anyways? You know, and I look quickly and absolutely nobody there, but it was loud and in my head. So could that, you know, what's that about? Could that be somebody trying to get my attention? Could I be picking up somebody's thought? You know, was I imagining it? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it could be. I mean, a lot of people have heard loved ones call their name, right?
Yeah.
Have you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You have too, right? Yeah.
Well, for me, I only shared that story that happened two years ago, Christmas time, the hello. But it didn't say my name. It was just hello. And I still haven't... when I shared this with some of our like-minded folks, and they're like, well, why are you questioning? You believe in all this. But it was different. It was like, but I feel like someone was trying to get my attention, and why and who. So I just wanted to know, what can I do for you? What do you want? That kind of thing. Not fearful. But yeah, I like that idea, though, that someone would call us by name.
Question, do you feel that according to Edgar Cayce, our loved ones, our spirits are helping us from above? I do, so I'd like to hear from you on that. You know, it's also interesting, as Tom will point out, you know, it's not necessarily above, you know, that they're calling out from above, but, you know, it could be right next to you. But we always talk about, are they helping us? And we've also discussed this. I think they are helping us in ways that they can, but it's limited to what they can do. I mean, they may nudge us in a certain direction. Sometimes it's very subtle. Sometimes they'll be more forceful and try to give us a warning about something. Sometimes they'll come to us, you know, in a dream. But, you know, people always wonder why the world is in the state that it's in. If all these people, can't they change things from the other side? And I don't think they can, but they can do little things and try to coerce us into doing something that can spread out, you know, and help others.
They bring Tom songs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a good, and I was just at a party last weekend where this whole topic came up, and one of the questions was, you know, if mediums can do all of this that you say, you know, communicate in that, how come they don't rule the world? And, you know, I had to tell them that, you know, the medium is just a conduit. They don't have any power themselves. And he says, yeah, but if there's a disaster going to happen, you know, and they know about it, you know, why don't they tell anybody? And I said, they do tell people and nobody listens because they don't believe in this stuff. Right. So, you know, there's a feeling that when you die, you're going to become all powerful and all knowing. And that's just not the way it works. Yeah. You know, you're still going to be learning. And only able to do certain things.
True. Another question. Since people in the afterlife have minds, do you think that they also dream? You know, well, I would say yes. I mean, they still have conscious, but
does that mean they sleep?
Yeah. Well, sleep is our concept, you know, so I don't know what sleep is over there. But it would be interesting. We call them visitation dreams. When somebody that's deceased comes to us in a very tactile way and we can interact with them. Well, maybe when we're thinking of our loved ones and we're sleeping, we can go to them and they have a visitation dream. Maybe it works both ways.
Oh.
Well. I still think sleeping is a physical thing. And if you want to be technical about it, we don't really sleep either, because once our conscious is what we call sleep, we're dreaming, we're still us, you know, we're having dreams, we're visitations, all of this sort of stuff's happening all night long. Whether we remember them or not, it doesn't stop. So there is that. And the other thing was, you know, with all this that's going on in the world, you know, how can that be if there are spirits that are loving and can help? Why don't they? And my answer to that is, that's why we're here. That's what the earth is about the struggle and the strife. That's where we can, you know, if you want to build up your muscles, you push weights and it's, oh man, and the more it hurts to push that weight, the better you're doing for yourself. Well, you know, if you're a spirit on the other side and living in a loving community of love and joy and support, where's the struggle? Where you're not exercising any kind of spiritual muscle. You have to come here where things are difficult, where there's a struggle, where you have to push to learn. And unfortunately, you know, the state of the world is what we signed up for.
Mm.
Yeah.
Some of us push harder than others.
Yeah.
Was telling me about an hour ago that I need to have more exercise, so I was yawning, you know. I guess I'm not a pusher.
I said you just need to get more oxygen.
Well,
I think that it's the universal question about, you know, why do some people have more problems than others or suffer more than others? And how strong, how resilient can or should we be, and or how, you know, how can we maintain you know, our sanity when there's so much that we have to face? And Ernest Hemingway wrote something about that, saying that it's a whisper that we have to, other people are telling us what to do and how to do it. And, you know, you have to push through it, or you avoid it. And the struggle that you're talking about, the weightlifting. But he said, it's up to us to just whisper to ourselves that it's all right. Just go forward. And that was very meaningful to me. And because we do all face this in infinite amount of feelings and good and bad. And I think that, that's living now. It's not necessarily, when you pass over, I think you begin to see all of your struggles and recognize them and find some answers, which we were talking about earlier, that other people, if somebody has hurt you terribly and they pass, and do they feel sorry? And I do think that you see it all, and you become, you're no longer inert. You have a deep understanding, which we struggle for while we're living. I don't know. I don't know the answer, but
no,
that's my. Yeah. No, I don't. Well, surprise!
You're as right as anybody else. Yeah,
it's hard.
Yeah.
Life is hard, but it's good. It's a gift.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
People talk about a veil that separates the physical from the spiritual world. Do you think that this veil gets thinner as we become elderly?
Well, shouldn't it? Because we're about to pass through it.
Well, I was talking earlier that it was thinnest when you were a kid and you could see through it.
Oh, right.
But, there is, when you say elderly, when you get to the point where you're about to pass and then you see your loved ones come to you, that's through the veil, I guess.
I think that, I don't know that it necessarily gets, thinner as we get older, but as you said, when we're in that window, when death is kind of imminent, that's when it thins out, we talk about people straddling two worlds. We've all seen it.
And when they see the people on the other side and they're talking to them.
Right. So, technically they're in the physical world, but 90% of them isn't, so.
Right.
But there is a belief, a Native American belief, that the veil will somewhat disappear altogether and we'll see the spirit. I will see our ancestors walking among us. So that would be interesting.
Yeah, and that may be one of the meanings of life, is to pierce the veil and recognize that, we're still connected,
I don't know if it's because of being involved with the Forever Family or not, but it just seems that there are more and more mediums out there, and maybe because they're being more accepted and it's they're coming out into society, but I think more and more people are, as one of our mediums, Laura Lynn, will say, you don't need me, you can communicate on your own, and I think I'm hopeful that mankind as a group we'll be able to do that more and more as time goes on.
Here's a question. Are there differences among channelers, mediums, and psychics?
Absolutely.
I always, probably incorrectly thought of channelers as people like physical mediums and trance mediums that channel directly information from a discarnate entity, but the term is also used as another word for medium, somebody that's channeling information. So in that respect, I think a channeler and a medium is the same.
Right.
Psychics, no, because we believe that psychic information is different than mediumistic information. So, you may be very, very good at seeing something in one possible future that somebody has, or be aware of a health problem or something that's going on in somebody's life, but it's not quite the same skill set, which is not the correct term, of being able to communicate with a discarnate entity. So a lot of these things are, you know, it's like a lot of these terms are so interchangeable. I mean, but you can debate, like I always use mind and soul and consciousness interchangeably. Now, you can make the argument that they're each different things, you know, different connotations, but essentially everything's consciousness. So there's a lot of terms that we assign definitions to, but maybe, you know, maybe we shouldn't.
This topic, and when you talk about channeling, of course, I can't help but think about the physical mediumship that we witnessed questionably. But now I'm getting confused with the terminology. Was that physical? I'm talking about that experience you and Fran had.
Yeah.
Was that a channeler, or was that transmediumship? Physical mediumship.
You know, in the initial question of the differences, you know, you've got a psychic who reads your aura around you. That's a physical thing. It's that they can see your aura and then tell you things about yourself. That's strictly psychic.
Right.
Then you get up to a medium who is actually getting messages from a spirit.
Right.
And they'll tell the person that they've got the message things that they couldn't possibly know. And nobody knew except the person sitting there that goes, oh, my goodness, how this? The only one way that you could have told me that is that you got it from my loved one.
Right.
That's a medium. Now, and what Bob was saying, that, well, that's channeling. But the next step up, and I think what the question is the people who actually go into a trance and give their body to the soul, and the soul actually comes in and occupies the body, and then apparently can communicate with people as the discarnate. That's a third thing, which I am never actually seen it. I've seen somebody say they could do it, that I didn't really, I wasn't sold on that, and I've heard that people can do it, and in Surviving Death, apparently there was somebody in England, or in the book anyway, I don't know if it was in the Netflix thing, but about it, somebody who was very good at that sort of thing. So it does happen, but it's very rare.
Isn't that what happened to Whoopi Goldberg in a movie?
In Ghost, yeah, absolutely.
Well, some of our mediums, you know, tell me that they can go into trance, you know, although I'm not with them all the time, and at our retreats, you know, they don't do it, but wouldn't. But you're right, you know, Tom. So in trance, you know, mediumship, they're like giving up their body to the person, you know, in spirit. And sometimes the medium, I've experienced that with one medium, started talking in a totally different voice, as if the, you know, and then there's light trance, where when they come out of it, they remember everything that went on, and then there's deep trance where they don't remember a thing of what they said. And as Tom said, it's not as prevalent today. You don't see too many. And then in physical mediumship, it's still trance mediumship, except it's associated with physical phenomena. You know, like the ectoplasm and the, you know, lights and levitations and the floating trumpets and all that stuff and apports and, you know, and there are some real and a lot that aren't real, but for whatever reason, you don't see, as Tom mentioned, you don't see very many trans or physical mediums today, you know. But
I still would like to. I'm open. I am totally open-minded about it. I just, you know,
maybe we'll make another trip, and we'll. I think we'll have to go to Europe to find a good transmediumship. Okay, I think that we have just about reached the end of our hour. Let's read our global peace prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment.
And I'd like to say our loved ones are only a heart away.
And science is going to accept it.
Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Goodbye.